The weeping king turned into the olive grove and cast a woeful glance back toward the city of Jerusalem. Down below him, on the narrow trails snaking their way to the crest of Olivet, was the remnant of citizens who supported him. Off in the distance, David could hear the high shrill of the trumpets as they were calling forth a city to come into the streets and proclaim a brand new king, that traitorous man, David's son, Absalom. Some of you who are here this morning can fully understand the profound depth of pain tucked deep down in David's gut. You know what it is to have a rebellious child. Others of you who are here this morning have been that child, and you could testify to the reality that there is profound hurt on both sides. If only for David, that would be the end of it. But it would not. For I think about that moment as he was looking onward toward his great city, now troubled as it was with the coming rebellion. A messenger approaches the king. Very humbly, he petitions the king for access into his immediate presence. David, with his typical grace, even in the midst of such circumstances, beckons him to come forward, and the messenger leans into an aged ear, whispers, "Ahithophel has gone to Absalom's side." You should picture David turning white and an elderly arm outstretched and a trembling hand grasping hold of a gnarled olive tree. The other hand coming to a pounding chest as David, below his breath, begins to mutter what he just heard. "Ahithophel, to Absalom's side?" It would be one thing if it could just stop with Absalom. After all, Absalom and David had not gotten along well for some time. Truly, Absalom was a distant son at this point, but Ahithophel, a soulmate, a spiritual companion, a court advisor, an intimate friend. Well, you might expect someone like Absalom to turn as he has, but not Ahithophel. It's no small wonder to me that perhaps that evening, maybe if not that evening, but a few days later, perhaps down along the banks of the Jordan River in a humble military tent, resting on a carpet with a low table in front of him and a small candle sitting there next to him, the monarch of Israel pulls out a pen and begins to scrawl on a scroll Psalm 55. Psalm 55 is his effort to recount the agony besetting him. I'm not going to read all of it, but just enough. Let me invite you, please, to listen attentively. "Listen to my prayer, O God. Do not ignore my plea. Hear me and answer me. My thoughts trouble me, and I am distraught at the voice of the enemy, at the stares of the wicked. For they bring down suffering upon me and revile me in their anger. My heart is in anguish within me. The terrors of death assail me. Fear and trembling have beset me. Horror has overwhelmed me. I said, oh, that I had wings like a dove. I would fly away and stay in the desert. I would flee far away I would hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and storm. Have you been there? Could you pen these words? What kind of sorrow is challenging you this morning? Could it be that you are feeling the sharp betrayal of a friend, a family member? Maybe you arrived here with your mate with the greatest enthusiasm, both of you excited about the opportunity, and yet, as the semester has begun and the work has unfolded, you're finding that there's a distance creeping in between the two of you, and you're scared. You don't know what to do about it. You're anxious. Maybe it is that folks had covenanted with you to pray for you, indeed, to support you in your work. They believed in your arrival here. They had lofty ambitions about what God was going to do through you, but you've not heard from them. And indeed, as time has gone on, their support has waned. For some of you, it's akin to a cloud on a hot, famished day. It teases, but provides no rain. Some of you here may have a hidden shame, and it's exasperated day in and day out as you walk in and amongst the hallways and classrooms of this place. As you interact with your peers and spend time with these dear ones up here on the stage. And you would just die if you thought for a second that anyone would take hold of that thing hidden so deeply within. But it gnarls at you. It mocks you. And it makes you want to run away. Are you afraid, any of you, about what tomorrow might bring? What could God do in my life in the hours ahead? And when you ask yourself that question, you begin to find yourself trembling a bit. Your soul quavers because you know that while He is very good, oftentimes He sends His servants on very treacherous journeys. Maybe you feel like you're on one right now, and you wish to the highest heavens that you had wings like a dove and could just fly away to the farthest most place where no man has gone before, where you have no obligation, no responsibility, no one harassing you, no thing demanding your attention. I love who I am. I absolutely relish being a husband. I love being a daddy to two little girls. I can't think of anything I would rather do in my life than be a pastor. I love it. And I cherish being a friend. And yet, in the midst of all of that, I have days where the simple fact is I just want to have wings like a dove and fly to the furthest place one can find. Those days, frankly, are too many for me. It may be that I should be more disciplined in containing that and not allowing myself to wander down those kinds of thoughts. But when you have a man sitting in your office, as I have recently, and he is weeping because of a rebellious child, or a woman sitting with some of us sharing about how she has been raped lately by her husband's best friend, and her husband refuses to believe her. Or when you have to love a man, as we are doing right now, a longtime member of our church who this very hour is just down the street in Manny Alvarez's court being tried for the brutal murder of his wife. You have days when you just want to fly away to the farthest place, to a safe shelter where nobody is going to pull on you anymore. Those days are very real. It's not necessarily a bad thing to want to have a respite. Don't overlook the fact that even right here in the text, David has inserted that captivating word, Selah. Because what it does is it invites us, in the midst of all of the turmoil, to just stop cold in our tracks and take stock of what is around us and maybe rest in the midst. And yet, Selah isn't the end of the story. I want to tell you that I'm convinced that David wants so much to go back to that wilderness where he had so many friends surrounding him night after night as he ran from King Saul. I want to remind you of somebody like John Mark, who stood there with Paul and Barnabas looking at the brooding mountains of southern Turkey, thinking to himself, I'm out of here. I'm going back home. All of us have moments where we want to run. What are yours and where do you want to go? Back home? To mama? As did John Mark? To the old job that you used to enjoy so much, but at the time you didn't think you did, but now that you're not there, you realize how much you took it for granted. Maybe back to an old life, not this new life where this idea of vocational ministry is beckoning you. Back where it seems safer, quieter, not nearly as challenging or stretching. Krista and I have this imaginary place that we want to go. It is under the piney woods of East Texas. Just a small strip of land is all we need. A couple of horses, a few head of cattle. The only thing I want to put up with in a day is an ornery steer. A cowboy hat and boots and a pickup truck. Those are good days in my mind. And they are many in my mind. But do you realize with me? Do you realize with David? God doesn't often give us that kind of option, does He? Because in that kind of place, though it would be satisfying on a certain level, you should know, as I have to remind myself, that it is most often far away from the will of God. It sounds safe and captivating, but it's removed from where He wants us to be. It's because of this that David pens what he pens. Verse 6 says, and you can hear him in his tent crying it out, "Oh, if I just had wings like a dove, I would fly to the farthest place." But notice verse 16. But, I call to God. And the Lord saves me. Evening, morning, noon. I cry out in distress, and He hears my voice. He ransoms me unharmed from the battle that I wage. Now, I'm certain you're learning this. Little three-letter words like and but demand your attention in God's love letter. You should always make an effort to circle them, highlight them in some way, because they draw an important contrast for you. David is talking about how much he wants to stick his head in the sand, just get away from it all, just flee somewhere safe. But I call on God instead. There's a contrast that drives us to keep life from being about us, about you and about me and about David, and making life about Him, the Almighty, who has everything in the hollow of His hand. But I call to God. When? Occasionally? No. Evening, morning, noon. And we almost hear there echoes of Psalm 68, where it is said, our God daily bears us up. Daily. Moment by moment, He has us in His grip. Evening, morning, and noon, I cry out. I have to pause and ask you, when was the last time you cried out to God? When was the last time you took a reprieve from all of the activity, or in the midst of all the activity, humbled yourself and cried to Him and asked Him to deal with you and meet you where you are? David does that here, probably on the banks of the Jordan, knowing that just over the hill to the west is a great city in turmoil, knowing that his own son has betrayed him and his closest of advisors has turned against him. And here he cries out to his God and discovers that God hears him. He hears his voice and ransoms him unharmed from the battle. Charles Spurgeon writes about this, that even the dove of old found no rest till she returned to her ark. And we, amid all our sorrow, may find rest in Jesus. Do you believe that? Do you really believe that? I love history. It's one of my pastimes. Not at all uncommon to find me at home somewhere in a corner with a big history book, just catching a few minutes of some idea about how the Prussians ran their military or how Eisenhower had men land on a beach. Because I love history, I conjure up an image in my mind of a soldier out on the smoke-filled and foggy fields, maybe in England or someplace, perhaps it's in the 1300s. I want you to look at this soldier. He has this gray-toned chainmail around his torso and up around his neck. And in his hand, held loosely, is a large sword. And when you pay attention to the sword, you realize that it's quite tarnished, soaked in blood, covered with muck. Indeed, the blade is bent and beaten. And as you observe still more closely, you see that the links within the chainmail are torn asunder. There are many chinks in the armor. And he's stoop-shouldered, and his head is down. But what little of his face you see is etched with dirt and pain and fear and weariness. Some of you, because of circumstances in your life this morning, are this soldier, stoop-shouldered, with a weary face. Into the midst of this steps the commander, who gently approaches and with nimble fingers begins to lock together the links of the armor. Occasionally he takes a palm and opens it up and brushes some of the dirt and dust off. After some period of time, he takes heavy hands and lays them on those stooped shoulders and looks attentively at the spent soldier. Not even looking up, the soldier mutters words that I often mutter in the battle that I wage, words that you probably mutter in the battle that you wage. The soldier says quietly, and with shame, I want to run. I just want to run. If I had wings like a dove, I would just fly away to the farthest place. And the commander with great understanding, takes nail-pierced hands and cups the soldier's chin and looks him in the eye and says, "I know. I know you want to run. I know you want to fly away. Chin up, kid. I'm with you. I will ransom you from the battle that you wage. Call on me and let me." Oh, that I had wings like a dove. I would fly to the farthest place. I would find shelter there. But, I call to God, the Lord who saves me, evening, morning, noon. I cry out to Him and He hears me and ransoms me from the battle that I wage and that you wage.